lazo. So this morning, as we return to the practice of settling the mind in its natural state, it's good to back up, just take in the big picture so we can contextualize this and see the deeper meaning of what we're doing, because on the face of it, what we're doing is so simple. One can maybe think it's a bit simplistic. Go back to a very large issue in Buddha Dharma as a whole in response to the question, what makes us so vulnerable to suffering? You know, really good question, existential question. And the very short answer is it is because we so closely hold onto and identify with our bodies and minds, the five skandhas. That's what makes us so vulnerable. So, bodies and minds. Well, in this practice of settling the mind, we are very deliberately withdrawing our attention in this exercise of selective attention, withdrawing our attention not only from the surrounding environment, but in this practice, we're withdrawing it also, as much as we can, even from our experience of our bodies. Right? So, between body and mind, we're withdrawing it from mind and bringing it bringing it away from the body to the mind. And so insofar as we're disengaging from the body, then of course, then we're no longer closely identifying with it. Right? See, that's just kind of transparent. So here we are bringing it entirely to the mind. But now with respect to the mind, when it says closely held, closely identifying with, of course this means that if anger arises, I'm so my sense of identity is so closely bound up with that, that I can't distinguish any distinction between the anger and me. I'm just saying, I'm so angry at, and then I whip out my finger at what I am angry at. It's kind of like there's a complete meltdown of a fusion of me and that particular mental event that's arising at the time, and like that. And I might not even be aware that I'm angry. It's just that, oh, that person. And so, as with mental afflictions, as with emotions and desires and memories and personal history and everything else, this complete fusion of identity with these. And this is why, if one wonders, if you read Buddhist phenomenology, abhidhamma and so forth, how come all the lists, you know, the five of this and the 18 dhatus and this and all that kind of business, and it's to do the opposite of confuse, what shall we say, defuse? And that is confusion is fusing these all together, you know, looking into the mirror and say, oh, I'm looking good today, or otherwise, you know. That is complete fusion of this face, that's me. Oh, smiling, oh, yeah, that's me, you know. So complete fusion of something that's not a person at all. It's just skin, right? And there it is, oh, that's me. Or looking at one's you know, figure, maybe one's working out in the gym, say, I'm looking pretty good today, or not. You know, that fusion with the body, with the emotions, with the desires, with personal history, with imagination, with hopes and fears, with virtues, with accomplishments, the total fusion with all of these, right? And here we're defusing that little suffering bomb, you know, waiting to explode with a mindless touch like nitroglycerin, you know, frown at me, harf, you know, harf. Why, you think I'm ugly? You think I'm you know, harf. Just anything sets you off, you know, because you're there you are. You're ready to be offended, insulted, aggravated, and so forth by your body, by your attitude, your way of speaking, your attitudes. Just, you know, like hit me. Throw a dart in my general direction. I'm sure it will hit me, you know. So now we're rolling this back. We're rolling this back. We're rolling it back from the surroundings, my cell phone, my eyeglasses, my I'm the chairman of this mind center, by the way. Did you know that? Maybe it wasn't obvious. Maybe looking around at the plants and so forth, it didn't kind of shout at you, I belong to Alan Wallace. You know, but I want you to know, I'm the chairman. Yeah. You didn't know that it was all mine, did you? Right? Yeah. We set the score straight on that one, right? And so now I'm pulling my awareness away from all that around me that is mine, and then pulling it away from my body, coming to the mind, but now I'm performing part of that same surgery of extrication, of expedition, getting out of the rut, by attending to the mind rather than being fused with it. So now let's go back briefly to this, I think, very, very profound description from the Dzogchen literature, the Vajra essence, of course, of how our minds, our ordinary minds, samsaric minds, are emerging on a daily basis. And in fact, it's much more subtle than that, but on a daily basis from deep sleep, where we're immersed in non-lucid, dreamless, deep sleep, where we're immersed in a field of unknowing, right? Not absolute, but it's a pretty good approximation. To where we are right now, as far as I can tell, nobody's deep asleep. And so here we are with the conceptual mind and fully activated, all of the six senses fully activated, and we're making sense of everything. Everything seems quite familiar. The real world is out there. I'm really in here. And so let's tango, you know, let's dance, let's do what we're doing. And so we're going, and so there we are. Now, where did that come from? How did this mind that is making sense of everything with labels and conceptualization and reification, where did this come from? And we're rolling this back, the ordinary mind fully embedded in, saturating the six senses. We roll that back to the term manas or mentation. On a conceptual level, this is more primitive. And this conceptual mentation is, again, it's more primitive, but it still is involved in categorization and maybe even labeling of, oh, that's a woman, and that's a man, and that's color, and that's sound. And so differentiation, and that's the object, and I'm the subject over here. And this is mental events. This is in my mind, and that out there is not in my mind. And then we sit back that. We're rolling this back. And we roll it back to what is called non-conceptual mentation. Mentation here means the ability to differentiate, to distinguish outer from inner, this type of appearance from that type of appearance, sounds from colors, tastes from smells, and so forth. But it's non-conceptual. It's not chattering away. It's distinguishing. We're rolling that back now. We're doing samsara in reverse. And we're rolling back from full-fledged, full catastrophe, as my dear friend John Kabat-Zinn says, to rolling this back to conceptual mentation, to non-conceptual mentation. Keep on rolling it back. And we come up with afflictive mentation. You remember that one. That's this very raw, really primal sense of I am. One ant fighting with another ant over the same little crumb, you know, or whatever. One fly, you know, trying to buzz off another fly from a little drop of honey. I'm over here. I'm not over there. You buzz off. This is my honey. And so something really primitive. Who knows how much cogitation is involved, but there is a sense, I'm over here and I'm not over there. So we're rolling it back to that. This coagulation of a kind of a raw primal sense of ego, differentiated, coagulated over this side, right? In contrast to the substrate, which is over there, the space is over there. Remember? That differentiation, that pulling apart, that breaking of symmetry, to use a delicious term for modern physics, that breaking of symmetry, the sense of kind of an amorphous something over here, the presence of me versus something over there, but I've now withdrawn even from appearances, and I'm just getting the blank screen, the substrate, right? Roll it back. Roll it back, and you roll it back to the substrate consciousness. And then roll it back, and you're back to substrate. Okay? So we just roll back. Not to the ultimate ground of being, of course, not to Rigpa or Dharmadhatu or anything like that. We've rolled it back to our launching pad for every rebirth, every incarnation we've ever had. From day to day, from moment to moment, to lifetime, roll it back to that substrate, which is this teeming pool of potentiality, heavily configured by our own karmic predispositions. So now we come to the practice without much further ado. What I'd like to do in this session, okay, I'm taking these little baby steps, not just kind of plunging you back into settling the mind, is yesterday, as you clearly recall, we're just focusing there, remaining in the awareness and seeing when the awareness moves and when it does not, relatively speaking, when there's grasping and when there's not, relatively speaking. And in this session, which will be silent, that's why I'm front-loading it, so it won't be recorded, this time I'd like you to really now focus on the space of the mind. So you have an object, you have a vector, there's a sign. Wala so? I kind of felt as if my battery died. Oh. Put in the battery. Hello, I'm a Dharma teacher. So this time let's focus on the space of the mind. Because you remember the dual interpretation of that initial entering into the practice of distinguishing between stillness and motion. We've already done it subjectively. And now let's do it objectively. There will be periods, you've already experienced them, when as you're attending to selectively, among the six domains of experience, of course, you're focusing deliberately, single-pointedly, as much as you can, just on that one mental domain. Attend to that space, the space of the mind, and observe when, as far as you can tell, it's still. There's no content. It's a sheer vacuity. Right? And then something happens. There's some movement. It's called javana. Activities of the mind, kinetic energy of the mind, the movements of the mind. Very likely it's going to be a rumination, but it doesn't have to be chit-chat. It could be a mental image. It could be a memory, fantasy. It could be a desire or an emotion. But see when there's motion. See when and then in that field, when is there stillness? When is there motion? Stillness and motion. And as much as you can, throughout that, exercise in distinction of discernment. Remain still. Observe the stillness from stillness, observe the motion from stillness, and of course the one and only key to that is releasing grasping. Okay? That's simple, isn't it? Didn't say easy. How was it? Make the distinction. Simple? Easy? Well, you'll see. It comes easier. There's nothing that doesn't become easier with familiarization. And then, you might recall, I haven't even said it in this retreat, but the Sanskrit term for meditation is bhavana, which means to cultivate. But the Tibetan word for meditation is gomba, which is closely related to the word komba, which means to familiarize. So meditation is about familiarizing. It's about that whole issue of expedition, of getting out of our old ruts and getting into new patterns, new flows, new spontaneous type of activity through the power of familiarization that lead us towards reality, towards awakening, towards freedom, rather than keeping us in the old grind, okay? In the kind of the rat race. And one of my favorite really short quips is from Lily Tomlin, the comedienne. And she said, the problem about the rat race is even if you win, you're still a rat. Please find a comfortable position. So let's continue looking ahead a bit further down the road on the path to shamatha. Yesterday we looked at fully pacified attention, and now we move on to the eighth mental state, which is known as single-pointed attention. And what is achieved now, and it's achieved for the first time, of course, is samadhi is long sustained without any excitation or laxity. So not even subtle. And long sustained, 3 hours, 4 hours, easy. Okay? So kind of looks like the battle's won. You're not quite there yet, but again, if you didn't know any better, you'd think this must be shamatha. I mean, how can it get any better? But there it is. It's long sustained without excitation or laxity, even on the subtle level. The power by which this is achieved is enthusiasm, as was the case in the preceding state. What problems persist is that it still takes effort to ward off excitation and laxity. Very, very little. So as you recall, this whole path of shamatha entails just ongoing less and less and less exertion, effort required. And so at this point, especially the oral transmission states here that in this eighth state, you need a little bit of effort to slip in, you know, from the ordinary state of mind to slip into samadhi. You need to nudge yourself a little bit. But then once you're in, it's smooth. It's kind of like taking a hockey puck on a frictionless sheet of ice, so thought experiment. And so you first have to go, you hit it. That takes a little bit of effort, you know, bump it. And then it just keeps on going, 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 okay? Or really smooth ice, you can imagine. So something like that, very little effort, really only at the beginning. And you simply need to be aware of the possibilities. See, they're not arising anymore, excitation, laxity. But you simply kind of need to be aware of them. Like children, if children might be getting into mischief, but they know their parents are watching them closely, I am watching. As long as the parents watch, and then they won't do anything. Right? Kind of like that. I'm watching. You know. Then, all right. So, the attentional balances, well, there aren't any. But there are the latent impulses for subtle excitation and laxity. In other words, you've not completely, that is, you've not irreversibly eradicated anything. Right? So if you somehow let yourself slip back, you know, back into stage 7, 6, or earlier, then they'll come right back again. So the attentional imbalances have gone dormant, but they've not been eradicated, so they can never come back in again. But I think you knew that already. And now for the first time, the type of mental engagement, whereas for session the state after state prior to this point, remember it was interrupted all the way from stage 3, remember? It was interrupted by coarse excitation, and then there was dullness, and then interrupted, that was in third is interrupted, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, all of those interrupted. Finally, uninterrupted. It's just right there. Not interrupted by even subtle excitation or laxity. The quality of experience, in the preceding one it was familiarity, and now it is stillness. It's single-pointed attention. It's stillness. And finally, and very simply, we also have another metaphor coming up, and that is, whereas in the previous one, involuntary thoughts were likened to a river slowly flowing through a valley, here the conceptually discursive mind is calm, like an ocean unmoved by waves. So when you view the ocean from a distance, I think each of these is so carefully selected as a metaphor. When you gaze out on the ocean from a distance, when it's very smooth, perhaps even glassy, you say, whoa, the ocean is so still. Look how still it is, right? But of course, if you were a fish under the water, you'd see there are currents there. It's not as still as it appears on the surface, but it's still quite still. For an ocean, it's very still. But still, there's movement below. All right? And so that's exactly what it is. It's very still. But down below, there's still a bit of movement. Okay? That's stage 8. Enjoy your day. I'll see you at 4:30.